No algorithm has ever cried during a tearjerker, or laughed at a comedy, or watched a single movie for that matter, which is why an algorithm has no business choosing your films. Mubi is a curated online cinema, streaming exceptional films from around the globe. Every day they introduce a new gem and you have 1 month to watch it. Whether it's a timeless classic by Antonioni or Fellini, or a current film from the New York Film Festival, or an acclaimed masterpiece, each film is hand-selected by experts. Malton on Movies listeners are invited to try Mubi free for 30 days at mubi.com/Malton. That's my name, Malton, M-A-L-T-I-N, and Mubi is M-U-B-I. Give it a try. And thanks to Mubi for sponsoring Malton on Movies.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Malton.
And I'm Jesse Malton.
And you're listening to Malton on Movies. And our guest today, and I'm very pleased that she is sitting here because I'm such a fan, is Melissa Leo. That is Oscar winner, Melissa Leo. Let's give you the proper build-up, right?
Thank you.
And
with the copyright and everything.
The works. Trademark.
Trademark.
Right. And she is starring in a movie that opens today, if you're listening on opening day of this podcast, October 27, called Novitiate. A really good movie, but written and directed by Maggie Betts. And we'll talk more about that in just a minute. But it is just the latest in a gallery of terrific performances you've given. And Jesse and I were talking just now about what we admire about you, Melissa, and it's that you don't seem to be acting.
Mm-mm.
You just seem to be the person you're playing.
There's a short list of people that can, but it's true. There's a short list of people where you watch them and you're wondering if that's really them, if they really know everything they're talking about, whatever it is, because it just seems real.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely you.
Oh, what a lovely compliment. I am an actor not to put myself on display, but to become the character. Mm-hmm. It's much more comfortable than this sort of thing.
Sure.
I'm so glad it's the two of you here because that lends a great deal of comfort to me in it. But, it is the pretending. It's the pretending mm-hmm. to be other than yourself that draws me to acting, always has.
And can you draw a line? Not to use the word draw, but can you trace when you first became interested in acting?
Oh, yes, I can, but it took me many, many years to see that line so clearly as I see it now. I was very lucky to re-meet again this summer with Peter Schumann, who for many, many years has been the director of the Bread and Puppet Theater. And when I was a small child growing up in the East Village in New York, my mom took me over to build puppets with Peter and his puppet company. And my brother and I did that for some time. And it wasn't a children's group at all. It was grown-ups. And eventually they asked if we wanted to do this pretending, practicing thing. I don't know what it was called, but it was awfully fun, these very serious grown-ups pretending. And one night, maybe 4 or 5 years old, I get to leave the house at night and go over around the corner to the building that is now the Public Theater, actually. But Peter Schumann had a floor in there early on. And at night, these other people came and sat upon the floor and watched us pretend, and they believed our pretending.
Mm.
That was the best thing ever. And I know now, years later, that that was the thing that made more sense to me than trying to make conversation with the neighbors or know what the rules are to this situation or that. To me, somehow, that pretending had a rules and a world of its own that made really sense to me. Still
with
today.
Puppets.
Well, as you describe,
I love that.
But as you describe it, I want to be there.
Oh,
yeah.
You make it sound so enchanting, actually.
It was enchanting, and what Peter Schumann was doing and still does today, it's a very, very political puppet theater. It's not your traditional hand puppet Punch and Judy kind of thing, which is interesting tradition in and of itself. But Peter has puppets as small as a finger. And, well, this is a fairly short room we're in, but bigger than some buildings even, operated by many people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a broad use of the term puppet. There's a lot of mask work involved, and And what he was asking and still asks of his puppeteers is not just to manipulate the puppet, but to be the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the gift.
Wow. So 4 or 5 years old.
Yes.
And regular, did you go to a conventional school?
Oh, gosh, I went to a lot of schools, I think. I don't remember. Didn't do so good in school.
I was going to say, because conventional school must have seemed just dull as dishwater compared to that.
I think in a lot of ways that is exactly it. That's very well cited. Yeah, no, I just never, that was another one of those things. I just never really got. So even years later at SUNY Purchase, studying and acting in, yeah, in the theater program there, mm-hmm, I did great with acting and speech and voice and... Mm-hmm. Theater history. I had to read a book. I didn't know that I had to read it. I was so behind. Yeah.
It's when you find out that you have to continue taking your science and your history, yeah, and your English, you go, but I just want to play.
Yeah. And I was not. There was no way I was going to actually graduate from college in that way. So I left and went on to the city, and just so far so good working.
And did you get work right away? Were you lucky enough to get parts?
Fairly quickly after I left and went down to New York City, I did wait tables, mm-hmm, I'm proud to say.
Yeah.
Like any good actor,
yeah,
I waited tables.
No shame in that.
And then one day I stopped waiting tables. There was not something ahead of me, but it was time to be an actor.
Hmm.
And that choosing was what opened the doors, I think. And I... play at the Public Theater called Cinders with Chris Walken,
mm-hmm,
and also the soap opera that I did for a year, All My Children.
Mm-hmm.
All of that came fairly quickly to, mm-hmm, me, actually.
Now, so many New York actors get their baptism of fire in soap opera land, mm-hmm, and many of them are grateful for it. Many of them have moved on, some quickly, some not so quickly. Others have remained there. Looking back all these decades, how do you see that experience?
Oh, it was great. I knew it at the time, and it really informs all the 30 or so years that follow. You're not going to gain anything from sort of thinking the work is beneath you, you know?
Yeah.
So what are the challenges? Well, you get to learn lines every day. Mm-hmm. What great training ground for a young actor, mm-hmm, to have that to contend with. And you know, material, you know, the writers are writing that material on an unbelievably quick pace. It's, mm-hmm, you know, the writing is what it is. It's kind of genius in a way, because it is like, get you back for tomorrow.
Sure. Yeah.
Get you back for Monday.
Mm-hmm.
They're working very hard all those years. I really am still mourning the loss of the regular soap opera. Not only the them being on, I can't say I watch that much, but they're a regular employer, and
yes,
they reach back into radio,
yes,
right,
as well.
Right.
Yes.
And for me, I am very proud of my days on the soap.
Mm-hmm. It's like the loss of the Straw Hat Theater circuit. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah.
Another rite of passage for so many, many actors.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem a shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But that's why I love that summer stock is still alive. And
that same thing, quite. But it's there's something, yeah, there is. You can find it, and there are those summer theaters and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the proliferation that once existed, I know.
Exactly.
And then lucky you. But then you also did make a choice. That's not luck. That's the decisiveness. Mm-hmm. You said one day, this is what I have to,
yeah,
do, and I have to focus on it 100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Even though the waitressing may not take that much away,
mm-hmm,
I want to concentrate only on this.
Yeah, it remains something I really continually find as a good advice to myself and, mm-hmm, to my beloveds and friends, you know, that singleness of purpose, it's an acting tool as well.
Mm-hmm.
The way you get to be universal is by being very specific.
Right.
You know, so it's just a question then of being specific with yourself, making a commitment somehow to yourself. And I also, in those days, I remember very clearly the thought, as much as it is, okay, I'm going forward with this acting thing, and if I don't get work, because I knew I'd have to make a living somehow, I would go find something else. That,
yeah,
would mean I wasn't meant to be doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I never met one of my deadlines, though, so here I am talking to you.
Good.
Yeah, and I think so too.
Were you aware? I mean, it's been said many, many times, it's not history when you're living it.
Mm.
You know, it only becomes history, quote unquote, after a span of time. Then you look back, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 25 years, and you say, oh, right. There is a kind of a through line here, and there are high points and low points and all of that. Were you aware of a turning point for you when, having made that commitment, having made that decision, you said, I made the right decision and I'm doing the work I want to be doing?
Well, I know for sure today, I don't know if I could pinpoint when I began to feel this way, but I do know that I am in my boat, as Joseph Campbell would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I really encourage everyone, whatever their boat might look like, to be in their boat, because I think it can make all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point it probably does have something to do with something that I'm probably grateful to you in part for, that recognition by the Academy of Motion Picture Science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, here's the part that I don't get, the part that's the mystery. This is on my end of things, not yours. I will never, I just told Jesse this, I will never forget the opening shot of Frozen River.
Mm.
I'll never forget the moment I saw it, because the film opens on a very tight close-up of you taking a long drag on a cigarette and looking very haggard. And I was not familiar with you at that moment. And so I said to myself, who is, not who is the actress, but who is this?
Mm.
I'm hooked. I mean, that hooked me on the movie, and then ultimately it hooked me on you and your skills. But, like, who is this?
And I remember it well, though. I remember mm-hmm. your reaction, because mm-hmm. there are times, obviously, every night he sees movies.
Yes.
That's normal in our house. Every single night he's out.
And you probably grew up seeing movies.
Absolutely,
all the time.
All of the time. And it's always interesting when we have an experience like that. When we find someone or something or a writer, a director, whatever it is, and you kind of go, ooh, okay, this is fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is different. Because that's part of what makes it exciting. That's part of what keeps it exciting, is creativity and seeing new people. And I've always loved following careers. And obviously I get that from my family. But, you know, we will find someone that we adore. And whatever they do, we'll see. Wherever they are, we'll check it out, always, because you know that it's going to be worth it. Even if you don't like the film or the show or whatever it may be, it's worth it to see them.
So this all started with me watching you in that opening scene of Frozen River. And then I said to myself, why don't I know this person?
No.
What's wrong with me? Have I just had my eyes shut? Because you had already been working for a while.
Yeah.
You had, and if one looks up your credits, you have a lot of TV.
It's something like 131, 141, something crazy.
Before Frozen River.
Here, I'll say this to you on that note, is I'll bet you had seen me mm-hmm. before.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes.
And hadn't realized it. My dad saw me play Kay Howard's sister. Kay Howard was the character I played on Homicide on mm-hmm. NBC for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote an episode in which Kay Howard's sister comes to town. My dad called me when the show aired and said, Melissa, who'd they get to play your sister? I said, Dad, that was me in a wig and makeup. So that thing of who is that woman?
Sure.
Ray Eddy, the opening shot of Frozen River, Ray Eddy doesn't wear a lot of makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Eddy wore her hair much the way I wore my hair.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like Melissa was more recognizable there in Ray Eddy's song. Huh. But that script was so beautifully written, and I was just following Courtney's pages.
And we're talking about Courtney Hunt,
yes.
who wrote and directed the film. But now looking back, Yes, I had seen you before. I saw you in a film I'm very fond of called The Ballad of Little Joe.
Such a sweet movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Such a sweet movie.
You know, by one of my favorite unsung filmmakers, Maggie Greenwald.
Yes.
And I should have known you then.
Mm.
And I saw 21 Grams, where you play Benicio del Toro's wife. I should have known you then. Dumb me, you know.
Oh,
I mean,
no,
I just didn't, you know. So it. I want to hear about this from your perspective with Frozen River and the incredible recognition brought you, an Academy Award nomination being, you know, the pinnacle of that. But that was just one of many citations and many things that were accolades that were heaped upon you. What did all that feel like?
And Sony Pictures Classics traveled, Courtney Hunt and I, around the world. I was in Greece and Salonika. I was in Marrakesh. We were in Paris, all over the world, San Sebastian, with Frozen River. It was a fascinating journey, and it's delightful to be back with Michael and Tom now on Novitiate. And I
love Michael That's Michael Barker and Tom Bernard.
Sony Pictures Classics.
The rather remarkable fellows who run Sony Pictures Classics.
Yeah, yeah.
And who have very good taste.
Very good taste, and they're very upstanding gentlemen. I'm very proud to be back working with them.
So they sent you on the ultimate promotional
around the world, and really in so very many ways, their support of that film and me in it really did a lot of changing of my life in many many ways, and the recognition by the Academy eventually.
Can you give us some examples? Can you give us some idea of some of the changes?
I think that the biggest change is really so difficult to actually describe because it's something so deeply internal inside of me. I really still identify as a girl with messy hair and sad eyes from the East Village, do you know? I don't, that's my self-identification. And what the recognition for Frozen River, because it was such a beautifully made film, and the response to it was so amazing, and people like yourself that see all there is to see, that attached to me in that film, and that film was, I felt accepted. That's probably the simplest way to put it, and the biggest,
that
deepest
says a lot.
Change.
That one word says a lot.
Yeah.
And especially for I think, for an actor.
We're homeless gypsies.
We're
wandering.
Yeah.
We run across each other in very fancy venues and say, oh, hi, it's so nice to see you. Okay, see you later. Bye. And it's a lonely, funny old life.
You give up a lot. You give up a lot. And
happily,
I think,
though, but, you know, that's...
Mm-hmm. It's just the idea, I think. Yeah. It's the kind of...
At Sony Purchase, they used to say, we're actors. We're the opposite of people. I didn't quite know what they meant then, but I do now.
Oh, God. That's so funny.
Or to quote Zero Mostel and the producers, you ever eat with one of them?
We do show up for the food.
Yes.
Are the snacks here yet?
They're coming.
Oh, good.
My favorite thing whenever you speak to an actor about the difference of working on an indie film to working on a big budget is they always say crafty.
Oh, yeah.
It's the first thing everyone always says. They go, well, I mean, the craft services was much nicer. Yeah. Much nicer. Priorities.
So how do you then navigate your life, your career, from that point forward? Because now I imagine you were getting submitted scripts. Am I imagining right?
You are imagining, and your imagination is good, but it's incorrect to reality. No, I did, and I also, it's probably the other thing that came out of all of that was the biggest mistake I've ever made in my entire career. And a lot of people would say, oh, so well, I guess Spielberg or other fancy names like that, they're sending you scripts, right? And I'm like, yeah, no, not yet. The nomination for Frozen River was a nomination for lead actress. I haven't really seen a lot of leads come my way, but the supporting actress that I was recognized for is the thing. And that's okay. It's nice work. And I was going to say something else, but I don't know what it was.
But it's not the overnight onslaught of
No, it's not the overnight
and
onslaught.
Knocking on the door.
No,
and,
no, my agents are able to negotiate a slightly higher salary for me than I've seen all my days. And but still in all, it's remarkably hard-won thing to do, if truth be told. And I think the days of the great big enormous paychecks are kind of, you know, behind us now, except for a hallowed few.
Right.
And that's okay. I don't know what I would do with all that. I'd just have to stand on the street corner and give it away or something. So, you know, you get what you're ready for. And, and that's definitely been a piece of what the journey is. I'm still so in the journey. Here I am. I'm still that actor who is like just delighted to have a job in front of me.
Yeah.
But the biggest mistake that I made was, oh, it's the first book my mother ever read to me. I was a little young, but my brother was a little older. Great Expectations. So when does Pip get his expectations?
Yeah.
When does he get them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's sort of what the story's about.
Yeah.
And I did, just post-Oscar, begin to expect. And that was the mistake. I then tried to sort of manipulate and choose and make happen. And really, my whole career has been by waiting quietly, being offered something, and saying, yes, please, I will do that with you. And so that's where I like to feel I'm getting myself back to. So sort of circumventuous journey to all sorts of new and different places that brings me back to myself.
Now, I'm not a big TV watcher, not because of any snobbery, but I'm busy watching movies. And so I had not seen Homicide, which everybody raves about. It's still talked about as one of the great TV
series. I was changing TV.
From the new era of, quality television. And you were on that for the whole run, right?
Not the whole run. No. I most of it. I did five. I think they did seven seasons, something like that.
So then you had no hesitation saying yes to Tremé?
No, that was a very interesting conversation with David Simon. David Simon, although he was the inspiration for Homicide, he was not working in television then. He was still then a journalist at the Baltimore Sun, and a very fine journalist who changed that city in remarkable ways with his journalism. True journalist. And so it was through his experience of having his book, Homicide, A Year on the Killing Streets, taken by Tom Fontana and Barry Levinson. They hadn't really planned on having a woman in that group. And then at the 11th hour, they thought, oh, we'll make one of the detectives a woman. Well, in the history of the Baltimore PD, there had never been a female homicide police. And so also David Simon was, you know, at the edges of that, watching it happen. And then, of course, along came The Corner and then Wire. And then, you know, on he went and has something very successful now I haven't had a chance to see yet. Yeah, so that was a funny little conversation with David Simon when he called and asked me to come down. And I thought, well, that sounds just really interesting. 5 years after Katrina, go down and go back to the first year post-Katrina and tell the story again. It's fascinating. And I had worked one time in New Orleans before that with Rest His Soul, Jimmy Gandolfini. A beautiful little film I did with Jake Scott, directed down there. It was the first time I was ever in New Orleans. And Bingo Bango, a few months later, down there for several years running.
And Tremé,
relationship at the time.
Tremé changed New Orleans in a lot of ways.
I think the timing of it was ideal. I think that we really helped the rebuilding in a very real way.
Absolutely did. I was there working on a friend's film, and it was one of those things where I think you're probably third season or something like that, and you weren't filming while we were there, but everyone was talking about it. And it was sort of this, first of all, they were all very proud of it. They felt like it was their show. But also they talked about the change and what it brought about. And that's incredible.
I think that's because of the journalism that he had done and knowing the difference between pretend and real. That he didn't want us trying to do New Orleans accents.
Right.
Nobody can hit that right, and they all get
and they get real mad.
Yeah, they don't get real mad. So there was an authenticity about it. All the characters were loosely based on actual people, right? So our chef was loosely based on Susan Spicer. I was loosely based on this amazing attorney, Mary Howell, who was there. Susan was available to you know, everyone had their counterpart available in town to make communication with. Mm-hmm. And stories Mary told me of friends of hers that had really, well, one woman in particular, I remember her telling me that she came to Mary after she'd seen a couple of episodes and said, you know, Mary, I had no idea what I had done, but watching that show, I'm realizing I helped this person in that way and that person, and I can't believe that I would be brave enough to go into, but I did. And her memories were coming back watching drama. It's a healing art, ancient healing art.
Wow. Well, the next film I want to ask you about draws on all the things you just talked about because it's based on a real person, only this time it did involve an accent. That's, of course, The Fighter.
That accent. Oh
my God.
Did you say yes right away? Did you accept that challenge willingly, eagerly, or?
Well, dear Maltons, the offer, as I understood it, by dear David O. Russell, was to play the mother of Christian, bless his heart, Bale, and dear Mark Wahlberg. Now, wait a second. If either of those boys is 10 years younger than I, and aren't there other female actors that might be of an appropriate age to play the mother of those two boys and seven girls? I haven't had enough time in my life yet to visit back. So really, in deference to an actress older than I, who knows who, but seemed to me that would be her part. And that was the argument I went to David O. Russell. And what I have always said is it was his belief that I was his Alice, that I went and played Alice Ward for him. And to be around the Ward-Eklund clan.
I can't.
In Lowell, Massachusetts. The only thing to pull me from the accent was darling Jack McGee with his New York accent. Bless his heart. No, listen to the locals.
I can't.
Too much fun. Really, just an amazing time. And, I don't know that I was guessing that where that was heading for all of us.
Wow. Well, you know, there's been a discussion for a while now since the development of green screen technology, you know, and CGI and all of that, about whether or not you need to go on location, whether or not you need to, you know, travel to these distant, remote places to shoot. But I can't imagine making a film like that, or Tremé for that matter, in front of a green screen and feeling as an actor the way you have to feel, the way you have to absorb and then communicate to us and the audience what you're going through. And it's, you know, you... Some things you can't fake.
No, it's. I mean, you can. I guess you can sort of fake anything.
You can sort of fake anything.
You can do anything.
We kill people and we die and we do all sorts of things. That's called acting.
Yes.
But
this is acting.
This is acting. But the less pretending you have to do, the more specific you can get.
It goes back to the specific. Well, that's it, though, isn't it? But I mean, that's the. We are very much physical, the tangible, you know, we like books. Books on tape are nice. They can be fantastic. Having a Kindle, things like that, can be lovely. We like books. That means our house has so many books, we cannot always walk in rooms, but we love books. And I feel like it translates in the same way that you could pretend to be in Boston... And figure out, you're an actor, you can figure out the accent, you can listen to it on tape if you need to keep getting back into it. But especially when you're playing real people, nothing can replace that. Nothing can replace the reality of that.
Now, did you spend time with the real family?
Oh, yeah, the whole family was around us the whole time we shot. And the relationship that Christian developed with Dick was really quite... quite remarkable. And already, although we hadn't watched it form because it had been going on for so many years, likewise, the relationship between Mark and Mickey. The movie was made because Mark Wahlberg made a promise to Mickey Ward that he would make a film about his life one day. And that kept them, as many people as said, no, we're not going to do it, finally got the movie made in the end, was indeed that promise, and having them all around. And, you know, I agreed to do the film because of David O. Russell's belief in me that I was his Alice, but it was Alice Ward that let me know I could do it. And it was her unspoken but clear in her eyes permission that she gave to me when I met with her for the very first time. And the recognition where I was thinking this was a woman so far from me, how was I going to do this? Well, her permission would go a long way. I knew that. So I really insisted that I get the chance to meet her, and did. The film company worked to make that happen. She's a little shy. She was a little shy. But I think we were both very glad we met. And the moment I walked into the room and breathed the same air as her, I realized she was not unlike my mother's mother. And that gave me an inroad.
There's a connection. That's a strong connection.
And then you go on the road to 7,000 festivals and a million junkets and interviews and traveling all over the world. And then you get nominated for an Oscar. And my favorite thing, I was saying to my dad, because it's one of my greatest joys, is that I feel like you are all of us in how we would respond to this. because there's what I think in our minds we'd like to be. I'd like to thank everyone so much. It's so kind. Thank you so much. And then there's the reality of, this is effing amazing. And I love that. Because we are excited. It is exciting. It's not normal. It's not everybody. You know, and we talk about it when we get to do things, especially together. Because it's family. It's my family. When we get to go to something together, there's nothing better than that. You know, who else could I hope to share something with? So when you are at the Academy Awards surrounded by all of these people and you win, and on top of that, the other thing I enjoyed very much was everyone saying how gorgeous you are, because if they'd seen The Fighter.
Yeah.
And there's another big physical transformation. Then you get up there. You know, and you're like, I am goddess, hear me roar, folks.
Oh my God, you're too sweet.
But no, it brought me so much joy. And whenever I think about it, it makes me smile. Because it is real. Again, it's real. I think that's the word that we can use to describe you 1,000 times over. It's real.
Yes. I don't know that you can shake that out of me. My mother, I think, brought me up in that way, and she certainly didn't bring me up with a mouth like that, but it was the time in which I grew up, you know. It's a part of my vernacular. And I love it when a youngster can celebrate the excitement of using that.
Oh.
But here's what this old actor knows, having worked on television quite a bit over the years. As a matter of fact, made most of my living on network television. There are rules on network television, because some people would prefer to not have that in their home. So whenever it gets brought up, I will forever apologize to the people that it offends and recognize that, for me, simply a part of my vernacular. Would I have done such a thing on purpose, as people speculated?
Hilarious.
Never.
Hilarious.
In your life. How could you even think to do that? And they tell you all sorts of things when you go to the Academy. They give you a DVD with a little explanation on it. It's quite an amusing, sweet little DVD. And they tell you don't make a list. And they tell you make it interesting. We're making a show. They don't ever mention don't curse.
Details.
But as soon as it was out of my mouth, anyway.
But
on we go.
I want to talk about your look in that film is so specific. How did you work on that? Who helped you? Who guided you? And how much, when you look in the mirror and see that person with that hairstyle and those clothing and all that, how much does that help you give that performance?
Okay, I have to mention three people who always help me in my work. And they always have different names, but they're always a huge help. Mark Bridges, who a few years after
Great Fighter, costume designer.
got his Academy Award right. because he is brilliant. He would hold things up at the fittings on the hanger, and I would go, I don't think so, Mark. And he would say, put it on. And I'd put it on. And this is enormously Alice. Mm-hmm. The clothing, the underdressing, Mark's insistence, and it's the way you work with a costume designer sometimes, yeah. the way they get you into that thing you would never wear, but the character sure would.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've learned also, my clothing informs me so much.
Absolutely.
So then I go, okay, so I'm going to trust Bridges knows what he's talking about, and live and breathe in this. Well, you can't breathe very much, so that teaches you one thing.
Yeah.
And then Johnny, that did my hair, and dear David O. Russell, who he'll get involved in certain things and others not. Boy, was he involved in that hair, and he had all the Ward Eklund's family scrapbooks and photographs, mm-hmm. and they're a well-documented family, both from public life and also their private life. And David had chosen a hairstyle that Alice actually no longer wore at that time, but had wore mm-hmm. at a time. So this is the one. I had three haircuts to get it short enough.
Hmm.
It is my hair, bleached and teased and teased and tossed. And then the woman who did my makeup was a woman I had worked with some 20 years before in Rhode Island and had not seen her in that 20 years until I walked into the trailer and said, oh, Trish, great. Because I need funny teeth and nose, something. How am I going to be the... And together, just sort of like with too much powder and squinching up my face and mm-hmm. silly old-fashioned tricks like that,
mm-hmm.
those three people helped me really to
invent. Not silly when they work.
Exactly.
Not silly when they work.
Tricks of the trade.
That's right.
Wow. You've played in a number of films people who are professional women in very specific professions.
Mm.
I'm thinking about you're the investigator is it for the FAA in flight?
Yes, some kind of investigator. I never remember her title, something like
that. You're an inquisitor, grilling Denzel Washington.
Well, I got to nail him to the wall, that's
right,
true.
Right. And then in The Big Short, you're somebody in the financial world who has to deliver a decision on whether you're going to rate this company high or low or whatever it is. And even in Oblivion, you're a command officer.
Or I was at one time
yes.
a command
yes.
officer.
Right, yes, yes. What is... Now, those people are less specific than, say, Alice in The Fighter, but they have to be... They have to feel right. They have to feel genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a different approach you take to get to that end point?
Well, those same people are deeply involved, first and foremost. Well, first and foremost, the writer.
Mm-hmm.
What's on the page?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were taught at SUNY Purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the page. Find out what you can about the character on the page. What do you say about yourself? What do others say about the character? What do you think is true and what's not? All of those actor questions to mm-hmm. ask. The director and the information that they give, Bob Zemeckis, priceless for me. I said, mm-hmm. what do you want me to do? What do you want me to elicit from Mr. Washington? Do you want me to chastise him or mother him? Or,
mm-hmm.
And Zemeckis looked at me and said, Melissa, I want you to get the truth out of him.
Mm.
Great piece of direction.
Well, that's good.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The costuming that I am forever will believe, whether it's true or not, that the costumer and Zemeckis hoodwinked me into this bright red jacket. because it works for the shot.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not put on a red jacket. I'm a redhead. So all of those little details and knowing I'm actually working with the props department and Mr. Washington in Boston as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And JP on the prop department, meeting him again, I realized that, oh my gosh, he had gone to the trouble. She's whatever she is, the FAA person. Mm-hmm. These people are also like so much more intellectual than I am,
mm-hmm.
Which is a really fun part of playing them, right? Because it can seem as if, oh, I've got all this information here and I'm going to, yep. And what I've got there is actually very cleverly laid into the prop that is her notebook.
Mm-hmm.
My lines.
Mm.
And I was like, really? You did? But I know my lines. But that became so useful for the continuity and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it takes a village to make a movie.
Yeah.
And it takes, especially with these women who are, in my opinion, so far from me. You know, mm-hmm. in another life, I could have been Alice Ward, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I am never going to be the attorney for the FAA. Not in a million years. Not this girl. But to pretend to be that, oh, it's just too much fun.
Mm-hmm.
The further she is from you, for me, the more interesting and fun. How do you make yourself be that? How do you think that way? How would she think? It's fun.
which brings me to the Mother Superior you portray in Novitiate. And what an interesting character. What an interesting character she is. And we're not going to spoil or give away too much here. But it's not spoiling or giving away to say that she is severe, I would
say. She does come across that way, doesn't she?
Yeah. But not just that. Mm. She's more than that.
Mm, thank you.
And but that's why she's an interesting character. She's three-dimensional.
But that's an actor answer. She can't look... You can't judge your character.
Yeah.
It's something I love stories, and I love hearing about the bag of tricks, and I love all those pieces. And just like when you ask someone, so you're playing a murderer that's a bad person.
Mm.
No.
Mm. Because, well, why are you murdering?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find
because
it.
Because even if it's something loose in the noggin, there is a why to why we do all the behaviors that we do. There's a why. That's what behavior is. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know that there is in the film a certain kind of somewhat veiled vulnerability in her.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Melissa Leo speculating what it would be like to be 40 years cloistered.
Mm.
And I think that would make a Gandhi of a woman.
Yeah.
And the filmmaker to tell the story is picking the harshest takes, asking for a little harder delivery.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to deliver that. Yes. Her job is to make the movie. I'll do mine, she'll do hers, and here you have me sitting talking with you guys.
but it would be too easy, maybe that's the wrong word, it would be too easy to describe her in two-dimensional terms.
Thank you.
And you don't play her in two-dimensional.
Well, nobody
terms.
Is. Nobody is that.
Yeah.
Some people like to kind of come across that way, and that's kind of an interesting thing to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about it as I get asked about it, and she is dealing with a bunch of basically teenage girls.
Sure.
Yeah.
You've known teenage girls.
How dare you, madam? How dare you?
You know, I've been a teenage girl. And so has Reverend Mother.
Mm.
Right? And so maybe there's something to the way that those young women feel that they are being treated that is part of the perception of the way that it's coming down. After all, it's Margaret Qualley's film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's probably...
That's a very talented young actress who plays the
lead novice.
The novice, yes.
Yeah. Well, at first she's just a young girl, and then she becomes a postulant, and eventually a novice, and then to see the rest, you'll have to see the movie.
That's right. That's right. Did you do research for this? Did you talk to nuns or former nuns?
I did. I spoke with two former nuns. I think the former nuns are a little more willing to speak about the life. And I think also the former nuns I spoke to were nuns at the time Reverend Mother was a nun.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And because
we should say that this takes place in the early 60s and for a very specific reason, because it's the time of the Vatican II Council, which I'm just old enough to remember the fallout from.
Yeah.
If you're not, see the movie, and it'll maybe even make you want to read more about that time.
Yeah, it's not going to answer your questions because it's not an accurate document about the Catholic Church by any means.
It's not supposed to be.
Absolutely not. It's a filmmaker's drama.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely set in that time, and it's important, and it's prevalent today because it is a time of great transition, especially for the cloth, women of the cloth. A huge transition for them. They were basically sort of dropped out of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
But see the movie and you will know more.
Do you
It was like you spoke to different. You spoke to some nuns.
The nuns. Yeah. So I have been told that I was sought to play the role some months before, but I only heard about it about 2 weeks before I went down to shoot. So whatever got lost in the mix there, who knows? But so I had about 2 weeks, and as luck would have it, I was talking to someone who knew someone who was an ex-nun in my little town in Ulster County. And I said, well, I better go get the information, see what I can. I knew the filmmaker had done a good deal of research herself, but I wanted to be able to see which was up and down and where to, again, specific, the truth, the reality, what do we need to make the drama? So I spoke to an ex-nun up at home and spent a good few hours speaking with her. It was fascinating. It was fascinating, her willingness to talk with me. It was a long time ago. She was a nun, so she's an older woman now, and the memories were memories. And there was a woman who was on set for a while that was endlessly helpful to me in, in what her experience had been as a nun as well.
And again, you shot in an interesting location in Tennessee. Was it a former college?
It is a school of some sort, but I don't know that the school is ongoing. I think it's the buildings are left from this amazing school. Every bit of the film that I am in is shot on the grounds of this school. There is, we brought up green screen before, I'll give away the secret. There is some green screen in the arches and things, because it's sort of in the middle of town there, right? So, but it looks like it's out in the country.
Very nice sleight of hand.
Very nice sleight of hand. Very, very cleverly used use of that kind of new technology. So we're not, but all we needed for acting was, in fact, right there with
us.
Right. I even housed in the dormitories at this beautiful school. By choice, I felt more comfortable over there than in the
Did you
hotel.
Stay in character? Do you
it's
that?
Not that. No. It's not that. That makes me sound a little kooky. and I might be a little kooky. I'm not opposed to that. But, okay, so the closer I remain to the character without being a crazy lady,
right,
the more prepared I am when the camera turns to shoot me. Which could be in 2 hours, and it could be tomorrow, and it could be in 10 minutes. And you don't ever really know, especially with independent. And so it's more interesting. It's more helpful to the film. I have no need to go shake it all off at the end of the day and have a drink and think about something else. I take care of myself while I shoot in a different way than that. And that is to remain fairly close to the character. But I am not crazy. Not like that.
Have you met actors who do that?
I have met actors who appear for all the world to be doing that. And I think that those very great actors, some of our greatest actors, do that so they don't have to get bothered while they're working.
Ah.
Genius.
Yes.
And it's
genius.
Simply
they
that
build
I don't
want
to talk about that movie I did 12 years ago. I'm doing this now.
Right.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah, it's smart. It's a smart actor, not a crazy actor.
No.
Smart actor.
Good defense mechanism.
Yeah.
And as you say, you need to conserve your energy.
Exactly.
And you want to stay focused.
Yeah.
And people don't know, I mean, we certainly don't know, that, I forget, many actors have been quoted on this, but, you know, you get paid not to act, but to sit around for endless amounts of time waiting to act.
Every generation has an actor that gives that quote. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it really is. It's the waiting that they pay us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get on the set finally after you've been waiting for 6 hours, and you're on the set, and you think, oh, that was good 10 minutes. I'm so glad I waited around. And you look at the clock, and you've been on the set for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But you just don't, just don't notice it.
Yeah.
Oh, your fingers are rainbows, too. Oh,
my yes. God.
She's just a rainbow of rainbows.
All rainbows. All rainbows all the time.
And why not?
And why not? 100%.
You're also in people's living rooms right now, or wherever their TVs are, or their devices of choice
to watch
television.
Yeah.
And I'm dying up here.
Yeah. Which I like to say, I'm dying up here. So people have an idea of the reference.
Yes. And... I wonder, again, such a different character. again, someone else that you're inhabiting and that is inspired by a real person.
Inspired or an homage to somehow, but not her. Exactly.
And for anyone who doesn't know,
I'm Dying Up Here is essentially about the Comedy Store.
The Comedy Store.
Sort of.
Well, actually, I like to think of it as about Goldie's, which is my comedy club.
Right. Yes.
No, I play a woman named Goldie, and she, not unlike a woman in this town, has a very singular comedy club. And in fact, it's worth mentioning at this point that Mitzi Shore probably did, by my understanding, something that nobody else did, and we would not have like a whole channel for stand-up comics today
completely
without
true.
What Mitzi did in her comedy in the
true.
Comedy Store. It just is she shut it down. No poetry readings, folk music, strange performance pieces, comics only. And there were rules, and not everybody understood them and argued with her, but it changed the world as we know it.
It absolutely did.
And that's sort of kind of the story we're telling, but very, once again, dramatized.
Sure, sure. I tell my students at USC, don't ever get your information from the movies.
Don't get your history from movies. Yeah. Don't get your information
What it
from
can
movies.
Do is it can make you ask some questions.
Precisely.
Yes,
and in fact, I'm Dying Up Here is the title of a book that is about the time that our show is about. So if it intrigues you to go and get the book and read that, you'll get...
Read a nonfiction book about the subject.
There you go. Exactly.
You want to be entertained or challenged or amused, watch the movie or the TV show.
Exactly, and drawing parallels with today is something we like to do when we work, and that's, you know, it's drama.
Yeah.
it kind of reminded me of, I saw, when the first episode aired, I think it followed Ray Donovan or something like that, where they did the smart thing, where you're already watching another show, and then suddenly this show pops up. And I'd read a little bit about it, but didn't look into too much. But then there's you, looking like a saucy sort of like a madam. Like this is your, I mean, this is your place. You own it. You run it. And I got into it easily. I found that it was easy to get into. And it is. It's such fun to sort of see. I keep going back to the word real. It's the only one I've got. It felt like. I wonder if this, and then that, it made me look it up, because I know about Mitzi Shore and the club, and I sort of thought, I wonder if it's the same or if it's similar, and it did. It inspired me to kind of check everything else out, but it's a really good show.
Yeah, and we love doing it. We're so pleased Showtime has given us another season of it, and we'll come back December, January, and begin to shoot again with that amazing cast and our producers, our writer producers, David Flablot, one of the best writer producers I've ever worked with, Michael Aguilar, just amazing, delightful human beings to work with that are interested in all of us offering our opinions to the people that we're playing. A company that really recognizes that the actors that are playing the roles might know more about it than the people who wrote the roles. And they don't leave it all up to us, because that would be a mishmash mess, but they do. There's such a cohesion between the different departmental. I'm really looking forward to going back. Hard work. Goldie Hirschlag is one hell of a woman to put on. It's not, it takes days. And it's so funny with the following Ray Donovan, because we literally do. He's shooting in our studios now.
Oh, that's so
funny. Then he'll move out, and we'll move in. His costume designer is our costume designer, the amazing Christy Wittenborn. So
love
it. We definitely follow Ray Donovan.
That's very funny. And you have the benefit of Jim Carrey as your executive producer, because he knows the story, because he lived it.
Yeah.
So I would imagine if something is ringing false, he might be the first one to spot it.
That we're even doing the show is all on Jim's shoulders, that the show has the giddy up go to go is Jim. There would be no show without Jim. And the accuracy and the eye on it, it actually is an even more complicated discussion than that.
Ooh,
because
gosh.
It's not only Jim that was there back in the day. Do you know, there are several of them we have there that are Al Madrigal and Andrew Santino. They really were there at the end of it too. Eric Griffin. Mm-hmm. They all played the store in the heyday.
Boy. Wow. Melissa, we have to say goodbye because the clock says we have to say goodbye.
Oh.
But we love talking to you. And we love watching you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you out there are a Melissa Leo fan, as we are, I encourage you to see Novitiate. Now, would I be the first one to rush forward to see a film about young would-be nuns?
I love nuns as much as the next guy. You know, I do.
I confess, no. Mm. I found it fascinating.
Mm.
And it certainly, and it did ring some memory bells for me as well. And
what was the first thing you said when you came home about this one?
Well, Melissa Leo was fantastic. That's what I said. And so I'm not here blowing smoke at you.
Mm.
I'm just telling you what I said and what I believe. And so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for all that you do and continue to do. And I'm so glad you have a second season coming up.
Thank you.
Of that show. Good for you.
Right back at you. Thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for bringing your beautiful daughter along. This is a very, I feel incredibly emotional talking to both of you.
Aww.
You make a huge difference in people's lives, and I love you to have her coming up behind you doing the same.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's awfully kind. And are you a social media person?
No. A social what?
Yeah.
Social, what's that mean?
Well, I'm just supposed to ask that.
No.
I'm supposed to ask that in case.
No, I don't really do that. I don't really socialize, so.
That's okay. That's totally okay.
You do what you do extremely well, and that's perfectly fine.
I live in a basement in the darkness.
That's perfectly
fine. I totally understand.
But, Jesse, if they want to find us, what do they do?
You are at Leonard Maltin. I am at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. They can find you on Facebook and, of course, leonardmaltin.com.
Where I write a lot of stuff.
You write a bunch of stuff.
All sorts of
like
stuff.
Like reviews
about
of your
all
movie.
Sorts of stuff. But also about film books and about DVDs of classic films and much, much
festivals
more.
Festivals and all that.
All of that and more. So thank you for listening, folks. We hope you'll tune in again next week. And until then, take care.
Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
No algorithm has ever cried during a tearjerker or laughed at a comedy. Or watched a single movie, for that matter. Which is why an algorithm has no business choosing your films. Mubi is a curated online cinema, streaming exceptional films from around the globe. Every day they introduce a new gem, and you have 1 month to watch it. Whether it's a timeless classic by Antonioni or Fellini, or a current film from the New York Film Festival, or an acclaimed masterpiece, each film is hand-selected by experts. Maltin on Movies listeners are invited to try Mubi free for 30 days at mubi.com/Maltin. That's my name, Maltin, M-A-L-T-I-N, and Mubi is M-U-B-I. Give it a try. And thanks to Mubi for sponsoring Maltin on Movies.